So let's get started. So we're going to talk about something that I haven't talked about exactly, so it's kind of rough, but I typed up a bunch of notes about it last night. And it relates to a lot of the sessions I've been having with all of you. I've been having some really good, powerful sessions about the different aspects of the marketing conversation. So much of it is about the conversation. Well, what do I say here to get them to move here? What do I offer here so I can take the next leap there? What do I write that's going to answer their questions so they feel more comfortable? I mean, that's really all about what marketing is about. So I'm going to read some of this and improvise some of this. So I want to talk about the step-by-step chain or process that makes marketing work. I'm going to kind of mix metaphors today. I always talk about marketing ball, it's step by step. But this metaphor of a chain is also useful. When you're working on one thing in your marketing or one link in your marketing, whether it's a certain kind of conversation or follow-up conversation or giving a presentation, each of those are links. Sometimes we get focused on that one link and we forget that link is only effective when it's connected to all the other links. It's part of a complete chain. And if you break some part of the chain, so for instance, if you give a talk to a group and you give a great talk and it's fantastic and everybody loves you, but you forget to collect any cards, then you've broken the link in the chain. And you can just totally undermine the whole marketing effort that way. So we forget that we're out there playing marketing ball, and we're playing marketing often randomly without building the skills necessary to turn those people into clients. And we forget that every conversation counts. Everything we send counts. So, for instance, yesterday Sarah sent me her proposal for the airport maintenance authority or whatever. And then I commented, you know, here's one thing to think about whether or not to put the price on that. I mean, that's a consideration or a piece. You know, I've noticed sometimes when people get proposals, the first thing they do is they don't read the first. They flip to the last page and look at the price. And then the rest of the proposal is conditioned by that price. Instead of, I haven't put a fee on this because there might be other things we want to change. So I want to get your feedback, and as soon as we have that, I'll give you a price. That way, they must read the proposal. It's an interesting dynamic. Now, of course, people since the end of time have been putting prices on the proposal, and that didn't mean they all lost the proposal, but it's an interesting little piece in the chain. Anyway, you're going to get that project, right, Sarah?
Yeah, I think so.
This long conversation with this one angry person, but the real decision maker, the main HR person, just sat and observed. And she got how calm and collected you were, how you answered questions well. You didn't get ruffled. You didn't freak out while he was freaking out. And then a few days later, she said, please send us a proposal. We're very interested. So... remaining, calm in the face of battle by preparing is all part of it as well. Anyway, so the aim of marketing ball is to get a prospective client to say yes to working with us, but it takes all these other steps, and it doesn't happen randomly. So just to look at these major steps, I'm not going to talk about everything, but the things that concern people the most, the things that people fall down on, they miss out on, they don't do well. So number one, we have our marketing message. Hi, Carol. How are you?
Hi, Robert. I'm good.
Welcome to the call. You can watch the beginning later. So we have our message, and then we get clear on the message. Okay, I help such and such do so and so, or I work with people on the autism spectrum who have issues, or whatever it is. So what often, however, people don't remember is they think of sort of as the message is something I use in my audio logo, and maybe I don't meet a lot of people, so I'm not really using it. Whereas the message is so important because it needs to permeate or infuse every single part of our marketing. anytime we talk to somebody, anytime we write about something, the homepage of our website, the description of our services, if we're not coming back to that strategic direction, I'm using the words of one of my clients, Mark Thompson. He talks about this clarity about your strategic intent. Where are you going? What is your business about? How are you communicating it? And the biggest problem that he sees with big companies is there's no consensus on the strategic intent, or there's minimal, I see a knowing nod from Leanne there, there's no alignment with that strategic intent. So if you talk to a lot of people in the company about what's your business about, what is your strategy, what are you going for, half the people will say something completely different. So how do you expect to get where you want to go if that clarity isn't there? So with us, it's the same thing, only it's in miniature. Our strategic intent needs to be expressed through all the different things, through our proposals, through the articles, through a presentation. And that can be challenging, because sometimes we're not sure of it and we're trying different things. And now it's fine to experiment, but ultimately you want to keep working for the clarity of that message until you get the kind of response you want. That sounds interesting. Tell me more. How does that work? Or as opposed to, Have you used your marketing message and they go, just doesn't connect. Well, when you get a that's the time to go back to the drawing board and say, you know, what am I missing here? Am I, you know, how could I say it better? How can I try it out? So that's, you know, you're sort of in the laboratory of marketing, of trying to refine all these little pieces right down to what you say about what you do. So that's the first one, all the messaging and the clarity about that. Number two is our marketing materials. So that for us, that's mostly articles and websites. It's also presentations. So we need to make them the best they can possibly be. It's not just the message. So I'm really learning this in my other class. We're really seeing good examples of this in my other class, the Marketing Action Group. You know, instead of 9 people writing articles, I had 60 people writing articles, and I was looking at every single article and giving a little bit of feedback on the forum. So we have a forum for them, a Facebook forum. And some articles are so what I call butt ugly that no one would read them. They're just unattractive. The words are squished together. The typeface is too small. And they don't quite get that. I mean, it's got to be pretty. It's got to be attractive. But recently, some people have been sending me well-designed articles that just blow you away. It's like it's so attractive, nicely formatted, great graphics. So you sometimes want to kick it up a notch. I have this, again, Mark Thompson. He's starting to write articles. He hasn't really done that much. He's putting together articles. And I said, I gave him a sample, a couple of these articles from the Marketing Action Group, and said, I think you need to upgrade your articles. You're selling to CEOs. They want something that looks professional. They want something that looks together. They want something that looks dynamic. Even if they don't read any word, when you read it, when you look at it, it should be a yes. Wow, this guy seems to have it together. The words are there. The look is there. So everything's got to be there, or it's, you know, it confuses people. This is a guy that charges $100,000 for his services. And if his materials look like he charges $5,000 for his service, there's kind of a disconnect here. You know, what he's got is amazing, but he has to upgrade his whole look and feel. Okay, so let's see. Next is the steps or the marketing strategies, and that's where it really gets complex and what I want to talk about most. So I'm working with a lot of clients these days, you guys and a number of other people, and this step-by-step chain of activities really needs to be done completely, and you need to understand how each step of the chain connects to the other step of the chain. One weak link, the chain breaks, as I said. So this is really the push I think everyone in this group needs to make to understand more deeply the links in the chain and how they're connected. So, by the way, did Sharon join our group yet? No, she's not here. I had a very good meeting with Sharon earlier this week, but she'll be able to listen to this. So let me give you a sample plan. So my favorite one is always a speaking or presentation plan because it has so many different pieces and they're easy to delineate and understand. So you pick, let's say, speaking. So it has to be focused and repeated. So what I see a lot is people trying a marketing activity and they kind of try it once and then it sort of works in a medium kind of way and they don't come back and say, okay, well, how can I try that again? How can I try that again? How can I try that again? So I like this whole thing of marketing campaigns. So for instance, Carol did a marketing campaign to fill her class. Some of others of you are doing marketing campaign, but many of you are doing kind of one-off kinds of things, but sometimes it really has to be more of a campaign. So when I relaunched my business in Palo Alto in 1995, after living in San Francisco for 17 years and having 10 years of my business in San Francisco, it was like starting my business from scratch. I did have momentum in terms of what I knew and how to do and all of that, but I had no connections. I had nobody that knew about me here. So I said, well, I gotta remedy that. So I went on a campaign to get as many talks as I could. So I was always repeating this process. Find the organizations, do the research, you know, find the best way to do that so I can identify them quickly. Create good materials, good written materials. And 94 was just the beginning of the internet. My website wasn't even up till 96. So this was all paper that I was sending. Put together a nice looking speaking package. And then I didn't just leave it. I followed up. I tried to reach people, talk to them, see if they were interested, sent the package, followed up with that. Like a dog with a bone, you know, that kind of campaign, and I'm not saying everyone has to do everything that intensively given your situation, but that kind of thing builds the skill every step of the way. And I got great talks and evaluating myself now, I gave okay talks, not as good as I can give now, but I gave pretty good talks, but it generated 26 new clients in 26 weeks. Now, some of those were just a couple meetings. Some were long-term. Some referred me to others, but in that campaign, everything turned around. Because it's not just that I did stuff, is that I fine-tuned it every step of the way. I fine-tuned my approach. I fine-tuned my follow-up. I fine-tuned every... I never gave exactly the same talk, although it was basically the same idea. I rewrote it and rewrote it. So, I don't know, maybe I'm obsessive-compulsive, and not everybody can do that, you know. I told people when I started my business back in 1984, the first thing I did is I gave a workshop on setting goals and achieving goals, and I called it Dreams into Reality. I have in a box somewhere a little paper outline of that, you know, that I did 30 years ago. I still have that in my archives. And but I did a little workbook for that, and I didn't have a computer. I didn't even own a typewriter. I mean, I didn't have diddly. I hardly had any money. But I went to the local copy shop a couple blocks away, and I rented the typewriter by the hour, and I designed my workbook. And I did that workshop many times. I can't remember exactly how many, many times. But I rewrote the workbook every single workshop to make it better. And was it perfect? No, but I kind of had it down by the time I could do that. I could deliver this. The workbook really communicated what I wanted to communicate because I was never satisfied with the first draft. So it's that kind of thing, of polishing it up to a point. I probably overdid it, God knows. But polishing it to a point that it really works. That's what you've got to be thinking about in every step of your marketing. And then the same with a marketing mastery program. You know, I figured that out. I created a big plan. I worked a lot on my newsletter and my pre-teleclass, and, you know, I tried a lot of things. See, I had tried a marketing, well, I'd done small marketing groups, a lot of them, before the mastery program. So I was pretty good at writing letters and getting the word out and blah, blah, blah. But the very first marketing action group I did, which was, I'm trying to remember, the first one I did was in Palo Alto or here. It doesn't really matter. But I don't think I've told this story, but I had 12 sessions. And basically, I gave a lecture for 12 sessions about the different aspects of marketing. I gave a lecture, and I answered questions. And it was good material. But at the end of it, no one had taken any action. No one had done anything. But they'd gotten information, so all they got was information. And I said, you know, I can't keep doing that. That's not satisfying. Maybe I'll sign people up for it, but I'm not going to feel satisfied. I want people to do something. I want them to take action. After all, I have a company name called Action Plan Marketing, not information marketing, not sit on your butt and think about it marketing, right? So when I was thinking about that, I had moved to Boulder Creek, and my wife had joined a writing group, about 10 women or something. And so what the group consisted of is, at the end of each session, the teacher gave everybody an assignment. The assignment this week is write on your pet peeve. Write a story about how you almost lost it. Write a story or something on blah, 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 whatever. And then what they did in the session is they just read their stuff, and then the teacher gave a critique. And I said, that's a great model. I want to do more of that. So it's like it got people to do something. I gave people assignments. We talked about it, and people went into action. And then I did various other things, and I put a lot of stuff online so people could study it. And then we talked about it and went into more depth and did Q&A. You know, sometimes we do Q&A. We do a discussion. Sometimes I present a certain idea. We have a discussion. But it's always oriented around, okay, work on that. Do that. That's your assignment. And because I'm working with people one-on-one, that even becomes more clear, and people take action. People like Sarah, who wasn't even sure her business was a viable thing but was hoping it, is now presenting to a gigantic, ginormous company. Yay! You know, it's starting to fit together. So, anyway. So it's a process. It's a fine-tuning whatever you're doing and delivering whatever you're doing, working with clients. But we often leave the marketing is often the poor stepchild of all of this. But I wanted to make it prominent in my business. If I was going to teach marketing, I wanted to be really good at it myself and very successful. Because if I just taught the concepts, that's not enough. So, you know, I created what I call little marketing machines, where every single piece was worked out and figured out and scripted in a way that worked. So the next part is you need to master the conversations you have with prospective clients, whatever the source, wherever they come from. They call you from your website or a referral or a talk or who knows where, an ad, whatever the source. So they're motivated in the conversation. They're motivated with you to explore a more in-depth meeting or conversation, which is what we talked about last time and what I wrote the easing about. I hope you all read that. It was, yeah. How to Get Prospects to Say Yes. I actually changed the title. How to Get Prospects to Meet with You, because that's a whole piece, and I have all these criteria. I'm just looking at it, but I'm not sharing it right now. So that conversation is so important. And I, for instance, I had a really great conversation with Nancy this week about that, or last week, whenever it was. And it was like, okay, well, what do I say in an introduction? How do I ease into it so it's comfortable? How do I feel like I'm not pitching? How do I just get interested in them so that they'll be more open to the conversation? You know, all these little subtle things can make the difference with a conversation that goes nowhere or a conversation that leads to, let's talk further. Yeah, come in and do that demo. Yeah, I'd like to meet with you. This sounds fascinating. Tell me more. So that whole conversation, which we've been talking about since the beginning, it's, you know, you haven't mastered this until virtually any qualified person you talk to wants to take the next step. If they're not qualified, if they don't need it, they don't have any money, they're not interested at all, well, it shouldn't go well. But if they are, how many times have we had conversations where you felt that could have been a good client? Put your hand up if this is true for you. Could have been a good client, but it just didn't go anywhere. Come on, tell the truth. Leanne, come on, tell the truth. So this is why I'm really digging into these conversations more. And, you know, what do we say? How do we say it? When do we say it? What's the best time to ask for this? When the conversation goes well, how do we close on the conversation without it seeming abrupt? You know, some people, it's like I get to this point and then my mind goes out the window and I want them to say, I want to meet with you. And I said, well, that usually doesn't work. Usually it's like there's a pause. They kind of get it. You've communicated well. And you say, you know, usually at this point, I'd like to have a more in-depth meeting. Or what Mark Thompson would say is, this is what I do with all of my clients next. I come to your office on my dime. I'll travel around the country, and I do a very focused two-hour presentation to you on these main ideas I've been talking to you today. And when you see that, you're going to have a whole new perspective on what strategy is and where you are and what you need to do next and blah, blah, blah. And when he does that, when he goes in and does that presentation, his close rate is close to 100%. So he's mastered the presentation. We don't have to work on that. We have to master him getting more presentations and talking to more of the right people. So we know where to focus in the marketing. So, let's see. And then, you know, as I said, Mark has really mastered this conversation, this presentation in his case, but you really need to master that. And I think, Sarah, you were a good example. No, it was a great conversation. It was one of the favorite conversations I've had all year. It really was, because it was like, I was really proud of her. She held her ground. She didn't lose it. This guy was just ranting and raving about how this guy will never change. He can't change. He did this. And by the way, do you know that he did that? Blah, 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 blah. What? Open your line.
He also spent a lot of time shaking his fist at me across the table.
Shaking his fist. I've never had a client that was like that. I mean, to go through the fire like that in your early parts of your business, that's great.
It was like a cartoon. It was like watching television. It was the craziest meeting.
Yes.
And all four of the representatives of the company sat across from me at the boardroom.
He's there. They're there. Ta-da.
Yeah, there was me and there was everybody else across from me. And Mr. Angry Joe, I call him. Angry Joe was shaking his fist and yelling and raising his voice. And every time I tried to say something, he would say, shh. And he would continue talking. It was crazy.
But then we shared some interesting things. I said, well, what do you do? What can you do in that case? And we talked about the whole thing of, well, one thing is when somebody is like that, the worst thing that can happen is you try to resist him, because the resistance will only increase, the friction will increase. So in a way, he's saying, I am so frustrated about this. No one has really heard me, and God damn it, you're going to hear me today. Yeah. He blew off a lot of steam, and he probably, after, I don't know if it resolved it for him. Maybe he still has to rant and rave a little bit. But obviously, the top HR person talked to him. I don't know what she said, but she said, I think we should definitely consider what she had to say. And he might say, hey, I'll never work. It's bullshit. This guy should be fired.
He may even have been the one who said, bring her in. Because the thing we say in coaching is that the emotion has to talk first. So once they get the emotion out of the way, then they can come to next steps. But until the emotion's managed, no action.
That's beautiful.
And that was totally it. And I guess what I really worried about was, am I going to get another chance to meet with them? So is this the only meeting? And of course, I'm like reading the energy, and it really wasn't the time to, to talk about solutions or to try to market.
It wasn't like, this was a very pleasant meeting. I hope we have a chance to do this again.
A gong show. But what I did was afterward, I sent an email that said, you know, thanks for meeting with me yesterday, but I don't feel like we had a chance to talk about solutions. And then I sent a marketing email about here are some possible solutions, and they requested a proposal the next day. So.
And there it is. So trial by fire. But then I said, you know, but that left an opening. I mean, I think you did as great as you could. It left an opening to go, okay, well, what other possible things you can do? That's digging in and learning how to fine-tune this and work in all situations, you know?
And I think that was how I started my meeting with you, Robert, was I was like, you know, the one thing that bothered me is I can't think of a way that I could have made that meeting go well. I couldn't think of, but Robert had some great suggestions. One was to have the standard story. So to lead with a story of the success of my services, like to have that in mind as my standard, and to have a metaphor that I can walk through at some point. I don't know that I would have been able to share those things at that meeting, but I think that's an amazing strategy.
Yeah. Let's talk about metaphors a bit, using it in conversations. I do that a lot, almost unconsciously. I don't know why. But a metaphor is talking about a parallel situation that they can relate to. They don't necessarily relate to what you're doing. So, for instance, I don't know if this is accurate, Carol, but somebody is talking to you about, you're talking to somebody about hypnosis, and they just can't get what hypnosis is. And the more you talk about it conceptually, the more confused they are. Now, I don't know if that's been an issue for you, but it could be. It could be for anything, for God's sake. People get confused about you name it. So so maybe she brings up a metaphor. Well, here's an interesting way to think about hypnosis. Remember the most relaxing time that you had on vacation? You were sitting in a deck chair by the pool. It was warm and comfortable. And all the worries were just gone. And you were just open to anything, to life. It's kind of like that. Is that accurate? I just made that up. So possibly bullshit. I don't know. But
I do use metaphors, I think, like you, like all the time. Almost too much, I think, sometimes. But one way, one metaphor I use a lot is, you know that feeling you have when you're drifting off to sleep and you're comfortable on the couch, maybe taking a little nap, and then your phone rings. And then you get all irritated because you were interrupted because you felt so good. That moment that you didn't even know you were falling asleep until it was interrupted. Well, that's what hypnosis is like. You don't even know you're in a trance until you're out of it. So I use that falling, because everyone has the experience of falling asleep. So everybody can relate to it.
Yeah. So I did pretty good.
You did pretty good.
Yeah. But see that visual picture and auditory picture of the phone ringing, you see that. So metaphors are often very visual. Mm. Now, it's a thing you can see. You've done this before. You've seen this in other places. And so it relates to their experience. So metaphors can really be powerful. Mm-hmm. We get too deep into concepts, and then people have to think too hard to understand what you're really talking about.
Absolutely.
So if people are struggling to understand you, find a metaphor. Mm-hmm. I'll work with you to develop one if you need one. You know, we talked about a couple. We used the plumbing metaphor. And the point of the plumbing metaphor was that it's kind of like you've tried to do everything you possibly can to fix this person. But it's sort of like you have bad plumbing that's leaking all over the place, but you know nothing about plumbing. So all you do is put duct tape on everything or scotch tape on everything, and you're making an effort. You're trying your best. You're working hard at it, but it isn't the right solution. You got to bring in an experienced plumber that really knows how to do it. And, you know, I don't know if you'd want to say that, but I am that experienced plumber. And the thing to, you know, it hasn't worked. It's not because you haven't tried. It's not because you haven't been sincere. It hasn't been, you know, you've done your best. But working with people with on the autism spectrum for 20 years has made me understand things about people in that place that almost nobody has a clue about. You don't want to call them clueless either. So, you know, so you can say, okay, because they think I'm a good communicator. Why can't this guy change? Because communication is different on the autism spectrum. It's simple as that. And then people don't get that. But a metaphor can go, oh, I can get that. So whatever metaphor you use, you know, you can find a better metaphor. But it's sort of like we have an insight into something. We have a microscope onto this or whatever. Okay. So let me continue with my rant here. So with a presentation, for instance, in a presentation, there are all the kinds of steps there would be. So number one, even before giving a great talk, it's getting a place to talk with the right audience that's likely to be for you. I've had a lot of conversations with Roberta about, you know, I have a good audience. Everybody knows me. They buy this kind of thing, but they're not, what's the best word to use, Roberta? They're not high end in many cases.
The better way to look at it is that they're not ambitious for large.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. They're not really as ambitious. You get somebody that's a little more ambitious, has a history of success. They are willing to invest more in what they want to achieve. Or the clients, the community that I'm really well known in, you know, are lower income and don't have the same income goals.
Yeah.
So I'm moving myself. And I'd do a talk and it'd be all the people that are in that bracket. And so my task now is finding places to talk where I'm in front of a different audience.
Yeah. You know, when I was early in my business, I was literally trying everything. So I came up with this brilliant idea one morning. And that was I would call private high schools in San Francisco and offer to give a talk on goals and motivation. And I would create a handout. And, of course, I would be very successful and people would love it. And they'd give that to their parents and their parents would call me. Ha, 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 ha. So. I can tell you that did not work. But giving a talk about motivation and goals to high school students is a bit like what you're talking about, Roberta.
Yeah, similar, yeah.
They ain't too interested. They really aren't. So it's not a great audience. So number one, you got to have a good audience. So back to the plot here. So, you know, you have to have the right materials. You have to do the follow-up until someone says, okay, this is sound good. Let's do the talk. So I got really good at that. I could get about one out of four people I talked to, I could get a talk. Other ones, they didn't have enough speaking slots or didn't do it often or it wasn't right for their group. But if it was right, I got talks. So then you give a great talk that makes people want to know more. And then at the end, you say, who would like to get this report? And you get a show of hands and you get 80% of the cards versus the other way you do it. Like if you want to get this report, give me your card at the end. Just a little thing in wording can make all the difference. That's one of the key things. Marketing is 100% communication. And communication is largely words. Not all words, obviously, but largely words. So words count. Number three, then give an offer to find out more. So what I often did in a presentation, I'll say, okay, get out your cards, get ready to hand them in. And then one more thing. if you would like to know more about X, how I could help you with your marketing or something like that, I offer a limited number of strategy sessions. So if you want to, if you're interested in that, write SS on the back of your card, something like that. So I'd get all the cards, and I'd look through them all, and a few of them would inevitably have SS. Well, who do you think I followed up with first? Those people, and had conversations, and some of them would turn into clients because they had put up their hand an additional time by writing on the back and saying, yeah, I might be interested. Now, there's other things that one can offer right there after the talk so that you can follow up with them. For instance, the one that, who was it? It's the guy that I work with that does e-learning. And he's going to offer people a survey that determines where you are in your e-learning development. And so if you'd like a survey, give me a card and write S on the back of your card, and then I'll contact you by email and you can do the survey. So that's pretty low key. It's not even a meeting, but it's a step that I can start engaging people in the conversation to go to the next level. And then you have to do some follow-up by email. If you just... Did I tell you this story? A guy who was in my class started to do talks, and he was doing talks with real estate people. And I said, how's it going? Well, they really liked the talk. They came up. They talked to me afterwards. And I said, well, what did you do with the cards you collected? Do you know what his answer was?
Nothing.
No, it was worse than that. He said, what cards? I didn't collect any cards. I thought they were supposed to call me. Well, he obviously wasn't listening in the class that I taught him and drummed it in his head. This isn't interesting. He missed half the classes and complained he wasn't getting enough. So he was like, he was missing the point. So I don't want you to miss the point. What cards?
The cards you have.
You ask for the damn cards. You get the hands. You offer the, you get the cards. And then you follow up. And you're like, oh, wow. What a revelation. It's all part of the process. It's a little piece of communication. It takes no time, costs nothing, you know. You got to remember that. Good conversations take a while to learn, but then, wow, you've got this tool. And then some of those conversations are going to turn into more in-depth selling conversations, and then you're going to close a certain percentage of those. So we've got about 7 steps there, pow, 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 pow. Every single one of those is important in its own way. Because, you know, there's a lot of people go out and give a lot of talks and they're not getting a lot of clients. Well, they're only missing 5 of the steps and they think some magical thing is going to happen. When I was at a meeting at IMC, Institute of Management Consultants, years ago, I was really active in IMC. A guy that was in the Tony Robbins organization, he used to have franchises. I don't think he has that anymore. It's hard to transfer Tony Robbins-ism to another person, let me tell you. You have all the techniques in the work, but you ain't Tony Robbins. Have you ever seen Tony Robbins give a talk? Or, you know, I did his firewalk thing. You know, it was mind-blowing. He was like presenting at a 10 level the whole time with no let-up of energy. Amazing. But anyway, this guy from the Tony Robbins organization had his own franchise, and he gave a pretty good presentation on whatever, in some aspect of selling. And then he had a follow-up. I'm doing this workshop. If you'd like to know more, give me your card. And he collected a lot of cards. I got a call from him the very next friggin' morning. And he asked me some questions and said what I was looking for and asked me if blah, blah, blah. And he said, do you think this workshop might be for you? And I said, yeah. I think this would be great. And I was in the workshop a couple of weeks later. And it wasn't as great as Tony Robbins, but it was a good workshop. It was useful. I got some ideas. So he, for instance, here's a brilliant way he handled an objection. At the Tony Robbins thing, he at the end of this 2-day ultimate achieve your goals and have breakthroughs kind of thing. I'm not really into that now, but it still was a great experience. You went out into the parking lot, and they'd set up this whole thing with these burning coals, and you walked through the fire. And, you know, I did, and I didn't get burned, and it was like, that's amazing. So I said to him, well, you don't do a firewalk. He says, well, you know, that's pretty dangerous, right? And he said, well, we do actually do something that's even a little more dangerous. At the end, you do this karate move and you break a board in half. Hell, you could break your arm. That's very dangerous. Well, I got to give him A for effort because give me a break. It ain't firewalking. It really ain't firewalking. Maybe if you broke a lot of those bricks with your head, you can see that on YouTube, breaking bricks with head, and this guy breaks the bricks and 10 bricks just crash. That maybe. If he said, you'll break 10 bricks with your head. Wow. So anyway, he had an answer to that. He had an answer to the objection. And it wasn't forceful. It was just like, and it was like he really believed that. Maybe he didn't, I don't know. But somewhere in his training, it was like, I got to answer that question because it ain't firewalking. And at the end, it was cool. Someone held up a thing and I went, dah, and broke the thing. All right. But he found a way and he followed up, and he followed up soon. And he was on the phone smiling and dialing the next day to everybody. Now, I don't know if any other people attended the class. I can't remember, but he was maybe a couple. But that's what he had to do to fill the class. Hard way to make a living is to fill classes like that. But anyway, so let's see if there's anything else. So look, you all have, this is where the interactive part comes, now that I've told you all of this. So many of you have many of these steps in place. Some are pretty refined, some need refining, some are, you're weak in them and you're struggling with them. So given this overview, I would like you now to share, what is your weakest link in this process? Because if you got the strong link, okay, you can just keep working at fine-tuning that. But if there's a weakest link, it's like, well, I'm always afraid to do X, or I shy away from this, or I never close, or whatever it is. So just think for a moment. In the whole selling process, whatever the marketing chain is, wherever the client comes from, whether it's networking, speaking, referrals, whatever, what's your weakest link? What's the place that you get confused, you're afraid, or simply it's just, I just don't know what to say. Often that's just it. It's not a big fear. It's just, I can't figure out what I could say in this situation. It just doesn't occur to me. And it always seems to be a sticking point. Yes, Nancy.
Well, I find myself getting confused, which I know is like a resistance point, around the fact that when I'm meeting with clients, when I'm marketing myself, they don't have an immediate project.
Yes.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
And they're going to call somebody and hire them when they do have an immediate project. I want to be on their mind then. And, you know, there are a lot of people competing with me, and they may have seen some more recently. So I'm not sure how to bridge that. And I don't really have the opportunity to say, I could say, so I hope you'll consider calling me next time you have a project.
Do you say that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, sometimes anyway. And I will now more consistently.
Yeah. But
it feels like that's one. I have like three weakest points, and that's one of them. I also just feel kind of stopped. Like I want to say, I don't know how to get cards. I don't know how to get contacts. But that's kind of a lie because I have a lot that I'm contacting. So.
Yeah, well, that's sort of a judgment of I'm not good enough in that area.
Yeah.
And maybe you're better than you think, and maybe you could get better. But it's like, you know, it's sort of like, how do I say this? What if I came up to you and say, hi, my name is Robert Middleton, and I have no idea how to do parasailing. Wouldn't that be weird?
That would be weird.
That would be weird. So it's sort of like, I don't know if that's a perfect example, but it's kind of like we're so focused on our weaknesses that we have a little complex about this weakness. It's not even a big deal. It's sort of like, so the whole thing of perfectionism comes into that conversation. So Will you ever get perfect at getting cards from people? Will you? Is that likely in this lifetime?
No. And I do know how to get cards from people one at a time. Yeah. When I hear you talking about these presentations and things, I'm feeling some envy, like that sounds better.
Well, if you give a presentation, you can say, Robert, I'm giving a presentation. I want to use that. Let's go over it again. I want to make sure I'm comfortable with it. And then you do it. I've had so many people do this.
Yeah. Like, I'm just wishing I had a – so yeah. Really, it's a matter of – here's what's happening to me. I'm kind of finding myself going, oh, I wish I had a business more like theirs where they could – you know, my clients are national and they're – so many of them, but they're all over the place. I don't know how to find them all in one place. And
yeah, well, haven't you given talks at conferences?
No.
Well, instead of wishing, how about thinking about where you could possibly give a talk at a conference?
Yeah, I've been looking at that.
You're knowledgeable. You're insightful. You're approachable. You understand all of this in great depth. And it seems to me that if there's a conference for marketing managers or, you know, I don't know, maybe those are conferences that 3M would put on. Or, you know, there's industry conferences. I don't know where they are.
There are a couple of big ones. And they're just a couple, and they're big. And it would be great.
Yeah.
I'm working on coming up with an idea for that. That would be great.
Yeah, so you come up with, look, guess what the theme of your talk is. And it's funny, I know it before you know it.
Is it my marketing message?
Yes, it's your marketing message.
I had to look at my notes to come up with
it's about deep consumer insights.
Uh-huh.
I mean, see, that's a topic that is endless potential for exploration.
Yeah.
River it shallow, deep, or whatever. And so, you know, I get really interesting is what, you know, what is a deep consumer insight? Okay. See, a deep consumer insight is what marketing people want. That's the food that they want. And it's rare. And so they're looking for it. If I could know really what my clients are thinking when they're in a buying situation, to buy this or that, if I could really know how they're making a decision, what they're thinking, how they're reacting, if I could know that, then we could put messages out and create packaging that would increase sales. Mm-hmm. Deep consumer insights.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you get deep consumer insights? And here's some things I've learned from interviewing gazillions of people. Mm-hmm. You tell how you do it and stuff. And it's like, she's the person who can help me find those deep consumer insights. By the way, I put together a little report, the 10 strategies for discovering deep consumer insights. Who would like a copy? Oh, I see a lot of hands. Look, to make this easy, pull out your business card right now, just hand it to the front, and I'll send you a copy by PDF. 80%.
Great.
The biggest group I've had was about 300 people, and I got 250 cards.
Wow.
So
that's great. Yep, I'm going to try that.
You have to have bushel baskets in front with a big thing, you know, just. And then you go, oh, I'm overwhelmed, and then you never would follow up with anybody. Well, then you have to have a system for that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so we can address that other one on our next call, perhaps.
Yeah.
Which is, say it again. I just blanked out what it was.
It is about that. Feeling that the belief, and I believe it's true, that they usually don't have a project when I'm meeting with them that they can consider me for.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I will say one thing for that is that my solution to that in many ways is keep in touch marketing.
Mm-hmm.
So, the e-zine blog, and I'm not sure if this is perfect for you. It is perfect for some people. So stories that are written material that are based on stories, not just concepts.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a real struggle for me to work on writing about stories first and then the concepts behind them. Because I can talk, you know, I can talk concepts day in and day out. I can create models. I can do all this stuff. But when you tell a story, like, you know, I think the one that I did about, I told the story about Carol and how she met with all these HR people and nothing happened. And I said, well, call them back and offer a free in-house workshop. I mean, people can read that and go, wow, that's useful. I can get that. And then I talk more about, well, how do you set that up? What are the things you do? So if I said, here's the way to set up blah, 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 it's divorced from my day-to-day reality. So can you tell stories? Can you give examples? Can you reveal stuff about yourself? I mean, God knows. I don't know if you read my last one. It was pretty revealing of myself. It was this whole thing of, did you read it? Did anybody read it?
Yeah, I read it.
Okay. Is this true for anybody else? It's not enough. I want more.
Yeah.
It's the obsession of our modern society, and I've been infected by it. And I got to the point where I was just feeling sick about reading one more frigging article on Politico. Did that help me? Did it make me enlightened? Did it make me happy? No. And I said, well, what's that coming from? So this is a very personal kind of article. That's not always appropriate. That's hard to do. I can't do that all the time. But anyway, back to Keep in Touch Marketing. Be real. Talk about a struggle. Talk about something that you tried to figure out that you couldn't. You know, one of the things that I really discovered about interviewing people took me a little while to understand, although I had an intuitive sense of it. But when I ask people this question, I never seem to get an honest answer. So I did a little research. I talked to a few people and blah, blah, blah. And someone told me that here's what you're doing, Nancy. Blah, blah, blah. This is so generic, I can't make a mistake. And I went, wow, how did I miss that? And then I realized it, and it connected to that, and then I made that a central part of my thing, is to ask a question in such a way that there is just the opposite of feeling threatened. They feel so excited to share. And all of a sudden, they were sharing things that they'd never shared with me before. Mm-hmm. And some of those insights that I shared with my clients led to product innovations and changes that were breakthroughs just because I opened them up and got that trust. See, that's an interesting article. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't say, I'm great at doing this, but this is how I struggled to discover this. Wouldn't you want to hire someone like you that had that kind of insight and can talk about it versus blah, 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 concept, study, 27%, blah, blah, yada, blah, yawn. Not that data isn't good. You know, we talked about marketing data can be useful. Mm-hmm. You're smiling.
Yeah, it sounds good.
Can you do that?
Yeah, I got an idea. I've been struggling with an article that I've been trying to write. It wasn't something I did, but it was something I was trying to tell a story of that illustrates something, and I think it would be good. So you helped me. Like, already I got one idea.
Good.
And another one bubbling up. So I like that idea.
Good.
I'm noticing that I don't always think much about the projects after I'm done with them. And I wonder if you guys all do. Do you think about your client? I'm not asking you this, Robert's leading this, but I ask questions for a living. So do you think about your projects or your clients afterwards? You guys may, because they're human, but I'm not always that curious about what happens after I give them their advice.
Yeah.
So I'm more interested in the people than the products they're trying to sell. And so I need to make that link. I need to find out that link. And
let's have some people answer that question, then I'll share something too. Are you interested in knowing what kind of results your clients got from the work you did? It's a really important question, I think.
Yeah. I stay in touch with all of my clients ongoingly.
You do?
Yeah, every single one.
You know, what does that give you?
It helps keep me in the loop about what's going on with them. If problems arise again, hopefully I'm top of mind, And it also helps me form a relationship. So if I know how this person thinks, then I can be more helpful shifting so it's difficult to form again. So
okay.
It serves me. It also gives me peace of mind.
How does it help your marketing?
How does it help my marketing? Yeah, I guess it's that keep in touch marketing that you're talking about. So that idea of if we touch base every now and then I know I'm sort of at the top of your. If something happens, I'll probably be one of the first people.
Everyone else that's listening to her, how do you think keeping in touch like that would help her marketing, Nancy?
Well, that's what I'm envying is that you know the results they got. So when you meet another client, you can speak with confidence about the kind of results that they will get or that they can get from working with you.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, absolutely true. It's about confidence. You can do all the steps, you can do go through all the motions, but if deep down there's not a certainty, a clarity, a confidence that what you do makes a difference, sometimes you think you're a fake. Ever heard of the imposter syndrome? I talk about that somewhere in the course. The imposter syndrome is despite the results you produce, you think, you know, I'm just pulling the wool over everybody's eyes.
Fraud.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, when after you've worked with a lot of these people, you know, hey, this made a difference. People are doing better in their lives because of this. I got to say, this is a weakness of mine. This is not the greatest strength of mine. So I can really, you know, I could learn something from you from this. You know, part of the issue is I got so many zillion people on my list and people have been through classes that I can't just call people up. That's all I do all day long. It's impossible. But part of me doesn't even want to get feedback. You know why? Is this true for any of you? I don't want to get feedback because what might happen if I get feedback? Nancy, say it. You're nodding. You have the answer.
Exactly. Because they might tell me something they didn't like.
Yes, and that's the last thing we want.
Yeah.
Who wants feedback? I've had people give me long feedback sheets that I refuse to read. Really? It's like, maybe I had a different client. I don't want to hear from that guy. Fuck him. It's my insecurity. This is my insecurity. You know, from a more enlightened perspective, I should say, you know, I want the guy to tear me apart because he's going to tell me some things that are true that I could change. And sometimes he might be misguided or wrong, and it was his issue, who knows? I can know that. But you can learn from feedback. But it's a bitch. So.
Robert. So I have found that no feedback sometimes is worse because then my mind goes to, well, they haven't got back to me, so they must not be getting anything out of this. Maybe they went to see somebody else. So I'm assuming the worst sometimes. And then,
yep.
You know, 6 months later, I get an email. Oh, I want to set up an appointment. Oh, yeah. And they come in. Yeah, it was great. I was doing really good. But now I need your help again. And, you know, it's very easy to assume the worst in reality when you don't have the information.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I haven't done any research on this, but my guess is that people are more like what you're saying. That is, they're afraid that people didn't get value. But I get emails all the time, more often these days, that talking about, oh, your work changed my life. I have a whole new website. I'm successful in my business. And I don't even remember who the hell they are. They took one of my marketing action groups 10, 15 years ago or something, or they attended a workshop, and I don't know. But the other part is being needy for feedback, which is kind of toxic. No, please tell me that I did great. You know, and if it isn't positive, well, I feel hurt, so I don't want to go there. So, you know, there's that sort of lacking inner self. It really comes back to the I am not enough. False belief that we have. I'm not enough, therefore I'm not perfect, therefore why should I get feedback? It'll just make me feel worse. So it's a big thing. It's not a, but like anything like this, if it's, for instance, I think it would be useful, Nancy, for you to somehow find out a way to get that feedback and turn it into a system. So a lot of these things are, you know, we've got a thing that we could do that could work. And then we've got all the emotional baggage around it. And though when we have all that emotional baggage around it, is it easy to create a system to make it work? No, because everything is in us is saying, oh, they won't be interested, blah, 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 blah. So we can't even get there. So we got to work that through and talk about that or do something until we realize, well, you know, I don't get many people leaving my office saying, you're a charlatan and this was a piece of crap. Ever happened to you, Carol? No.
Yeah.
They leave smiling and happy, like, maybe it is working after all. I mean, let's be sane about this. So, you know, doing some kind of, some people do surveys. They do surveys after working with a client. What did you get? What was missing for you? What would have been better? Oh, just the thought of doing that is like an arrow in my heart. Oh, God.
I wonder, for Nancy, and I don't know how your, you know, business works exactly, but what if you put it in place, you know, at the end of your time with them, if there's a certain time frame, like maybe 3 months, 6 months down the road, they would know how that information impacted their sales. Maybe it was just, and then you put in your calendar whatever that time frame is. So you say to them at the end, so in 6 months, I'm going to get back in touch with you because I am so wanting to hear about your success. You know, you're setting it up that way, and you know, you're really interested in following up. And then you do. Then if it's in your calendar, 6 months, it's just like an automatic check-in, and maybe that would be make it easy.
Yeah, I have a question.
Great, Carol. You're a good business person. You know that. She's a therapist, but she's has a good business head.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a system, right?
System.
And it could be a questionnaire, right? With simple questions to ask. You could be a SurveyMonkey survey.
Well, I haven't had success yet with that.
Yeah, right. Well, that's because it was so old. But, you know, yeah. So
what I've had success with lately is I went through like a week or two and I'm like, man, my appointments are really low. So I went through all my files and all the names of people I hadn't heard from in the last few months. And I they're all personal emails, but I just quickly, very quick check-in email. I've been thinking about you, wondering how you're doing, hope all is well, but if I could be of any assistance, please get in touch with me. And I got some responses and I started filling my week. So it worked. And then people are touched. They're like, oh, thanks for thinking about me. And you know, I didn't hear from some people, but other people, I'm like, what happened? They just dropped off and they came back in. So it was good.
So Carol just gave us a secret, stealth, easy to do, powerful marketing approach. I hope you didn't miss it. I just followed up to see how people were, and some of them came back as clients. Who of you couldn't maybe do that in some way or another? Hey, I've been thinking about you. So if I say to somebody, I've been thinking about you, I know, you know, you had, you know, you went through a lot of things in this course. And I'd love to know how you're doing in your business now. Not I want a testimonial, but how are you doing in your business? I'd just love to hear. You know, I have some of these people that were marketing action groups stuff that I formed such a deep bond and connection with them, and was so sad when the group was over. When this group is over, I'll be in mourning for a while. So I got to learn how to be in touch with you once in a while, not to get more business. You see, hey, what's happening? What's been working? If you need any help, let me know.
One group I was in, Robert, a retreat. They at the end of the retreat, they set up. It's about 6 weeks after we met. They set up an online group meeting again to check back in with each other afterwards.
That's yeah. Yeah, you know, that's not a bad idea. You know, we did, I did a conference for a while, but it was so damn much work. And it's, I'm not the Mr. Delegating to a lot of people and make it happen kind of thing. So anyway, we did it. But now that I've got Zoom, it would be fun to just do a Zoom alumni gathering.
I'm just thinking, I wasn't like bringing everybody together. I was just, but you could. You could have a Zoom everybody, but I was thinking
or it could be individual groups or whatever.
So just that kind of follow-up. Because these people that have gone through your programs, they're very different than ones that have dropped into the smaller things where there's not interpersonal work.
Yeah, I'm only, exactly.
Yeah, so anyway, either ones of those things would, like, you know, and there's always the groups that have, you know, once a month calls, maybe not a Zoom, for everybody that's been through a certain specific program to build community.
Yeah. So one other point is that back to Nancy's thing of getting feedback. What's the other marketing advantage of you getting feedback? You know, it builds confidence. It opens the door for new possible business.
But you fine-tune what you have.
Fine-tune what you have, absolutely. Correct mistakes. I think another one is that they're going to regard you more highly if you do this, if you do it appropriately. It's like this person really cares about the quality of her work. She wants feedback. She wants to improve. She's a professional. Now, you know, some professions, I can't imagine doing that. Can you imagine being a criminal attorney and doing that? I don't think so, because you only get that work person, well, who knows. But other kinds of attorneys, maybe it would be appropriate. It's like you've done all kinds of stuff. And, you know, how are we doing? Were you happy with the way we worked? You know, lawyers need criticism and feedback. Let me tell you, they do in many cases. I once had a client who was an executive recruiter, and she was a young woman who was smart as a whip, and she was a real go-getter. She was a real go-getter. I've never seen anybody quite like her since. She was in her 20s or something, and she was just kicking butt. And I helped her. I think I designed her letterhead and marketing package many years ago. She's probably a multimillionaire somewhere now. She's that kind of person. And I should look her up. Anyway, every time she had a client, she had an outside person call that client and interview them to find out how the process went. So because she could use that to improve herself. She paid good money. And I actually did it with a few of her clients. So... No, she realized that if I don't get feedback, I really don't know what's going on. If I don't know what's going on, I can't improve. So she made that a central thing. Now, look, with executive recruiting, you can make $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 with a project. So she could put that money in there. Most of us don't. So, you know, we can't pay all that money to do that. But it was very powerful, extremely powerful. Okay, looks like we're at the end of the hour. Anyone have any last word of wisdom or a comment or anything to say?
Thank you. I got some great ideas from this call.
Good. So we'll continue to work on these little pieces. I want you to think between the now and the next time. It's not like beating yourself up. It's just what's real. It's like, what am I struggling with? What is... that I can't seem to get a handle on? What don't I understand? How can I make this a little better? And, you know, sometimes it's like in the point of crisis, like Sarah. She says, let me tell you about this situation. It was like the world's best story. I wish we'd recorded it, Sarah. It was just the world's best. And, you know, and look at what happened. And you didn't get that result because of the session. Maybe you got something for the future, but it was, it demonstrated so much how you'd prepared, how you'd worked, how you were ready for this. And then you got the acknowledgement for that, which builds your confidence. Look, I told Sarah that you have a unique service. No one else is doing this. there's a government mandate in a way in Canada that you have to accommodate people on the autism spectrum, you're going to find ways in to a lot of big companies that are going to go, oh my God, we have to do this. That she's going to have to quit her regular day job and hire staff. I don't know if you want that.
Well, I totally think that's what happened with this company.
Whoops, your lights
on. Sorry. I'm in an office at work, one of our interview rooms in the light store. But yeah, that was it. So the email that I sent the next day, really the tone of the email was, you know, I now that the tantrum is over, you have an obligation to provide some sort of accommodation. And they couldn't ignore that. So.
Yeah. Not everybody has that. It's not like Leanne can say, you have an obligation under the law to have a limber body. Therefore, we must schedule 50 sessions with you. Wouldn't that be nice, Leanne? Wouldn't that be fun? Maybe. But anyway, so you're, even though you have one of the most esoteric kind of services I've ever worked with, you have humongous potential. Humongous potential. So congratulations, and congratulations for all of you who are getting out there. And Oliver, when are you going to Portland to take names and kick butt?
The week after next.
Okay.
And actually, I got a lot out of this session because I was thinking about what am I not doing that I should be doing in terms of the process. And I'm basically being goofing off between moving and what have you. And, you know, now it's like, okay, why don't I just look at the things that I need to be doing, should be doing, and do a checklist and start working on. So this was very helpful.
Yeah. Yeah, now that you moved, it's time, you know, you're going to be searching for houses and stuff like that.
Yeah, but it's,
hey, you might find a house faster than you think. The first house we looked for was the house we bought.
That's not my job. That's my better half's job.
That's your better half. Okay, so empower for that to happen.
She's already empowered.
We got one real estate agent who had a good, was referred really strongly. The person that gave me her card said, if you work with her, it'll feel like you're the only client she's working with.
No.
Talk about power.
Okay.
So I wasn't even interested in buying a house. I was resisting, and my wife wanted it. Anyway, I said, I want a house with a deck. That's all I knew. We have a house with a double custom-made, hand-carved deck, for God's sake. Nope, that's what we got. Be careful what you ask for. It was the first house she showed us. She showed us a few others that were garbage, and I said, okay, this is it. Price was right, and miraculously we paid for it. It was, anyway, so that can happen to you too. Then you can get into new beautiful digs. And but in Portland, you're going to meet people. You're going to get some referrals. You've got some connections, some things.
Some workshops. You know, it's starting to feel like I'm working again.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
No, you've been in limbo for the last week or two because of the moving. Okay, man. Well,
thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks, everybody. Enjoyed our meeting today.
Bye.
We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Bye-bye.